Blog Talk Radio.
Items, here we go with the main event of the evening. Ladies and gentlemen in attendance, Bucks and fans joining us around the world. It's time for the bout you've all been waiting for. Finally, it is showtime.
Here, man, we dedicate our lives to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We're moving, and we want that fight and to land on the line.
Fans, this is the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast. I am your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a Thursday night. You know what happens, man. Sometimes life gets in the way, so you got to tweak it. You know, you got to tweak your schedule. That kind of sounded weird, but I'm going to keep going. Anyway, we will talk briefly, recap mode in the ring. William Zapata got a victory. Last weekend on the DAZN Golden Boy card. So we'll kind of, you know, briefly touch upon that. Diego De La Hoya got upset. Your boy won a little bit of cash on that one. Got lucky. Well, not really lucky if you look at how it went in the ring, but I didn't think it would be that easy of a fight. And there was actually some interesting undercard action that we'll talk about too. So we'll start the show in the ring, and then, of course, the return home for Canelo Alvarez in front of, what they're saying, 50,000 people in the stadium against John Ryder on DAZN pay-per-view. We'll talk, of course, we'll preview and predict that fight. And, you know, I know a lot of people are not excited about this fight per se. Most people want to see, you know, David Benavidez and Canelo, but it is what it is. If, in fact, Canelo does do what he said he's going to do and fight Bivol next, whether that's at 168 or 175, we'll find out. But if in fact, that's what happens, then this fight doesn't, you know what I mean? It's not that big of a deal. Does it scream pay-per-view? No, it doesn't, but, you know, Canelo, for the money they're paying him, they gotta make some money back. It is what it is. John Ryder coming off his best two wins. You know, the Jacobs, I'd say, is a better win than Parker, but a lot of people didn't think he even won that fight, to be honest with you. Myself, I was kind of more of like, I'd have been fine with the draw. It was more like a stalemate. It was a really meh type fight, you know. Just the other day, someone said that Jacobs, like a reporter, said Jacobs outclassed him. I was like, class writer. I was like, really? Outclassed him? I didn't see much class in that one, as far as on a top level anyway. You can make an argument that John Ryder's best performance came against Callum Smith. And I thought, although many people thought Callum Smith won the fight, I thought the scorecards were a little controversial. I didn't think it was that wide, you know. Ryder losing the fight, I'm not saying that's controversial, but some of the scorecards, I didn't really agree. And if you thought Ryder won the fight, I'm not going to sit there and, you know, complain about it too much. But we'll talk about it. Like I said, it's not, I don't know, you know. There are some times throughout the year, especially in recent years, where there's certain pay-per-views that I just sit out on the bench on, you know. Right now, this might be that one. I don't know. Matters if I get a phone call or a text message or something like that saying, hey, man, I already rented the fight. You want to come over? Or, you know, you want to split it? Or, you know, it just, it would have been nice if this had, like, a really good co-feature. And you know, there is actually an interesting fight on the card that, you know, could – there's a couple of fights on there that hopefully, you know, they pop off. That's what we really need. But anyway, we have a variety of stuff to talk about. I did, you know, talking about that Tank and Ryan Garcia fight, I did get – it went down to the DM, let's just put it that way, and a whole lot of people getting in there talking about pay-per-views and how, first of all, the numbers I was reporting last week weren't right. They were probably working, you know, waiting on the Glazer report. Also that it was actually Ryan Garcia, you know, that was the reason why it sold. I got a whole lot of different messages. So we'll have a little – this is going to be later in the show. I'm going to address it just so I don't get the – I'm ducking it. But it'll be later in the show because there is some follow-up that we'll talk about when it comes to that. There is other fight news, though. Jaime Munguia is in a step-up fight, you know. His opponent seems like he's a bit, you know, past his prime in recent performances, but it's still a step up June 10th. We'll talk about that fight. There is a variety of other fights that got signed, or speaking of signing, Regis Prograis chose a place to sign, and it's not Top Rank and it's not PBC. So that kind of, you know, tells you what it is. We'll talk about a variety of stuff in just a short little bit. If this is your first time listening to the Ropadope Radio Podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/Ropadope Radio. You don't have to go to Blog Talk and Ropadope and download the show directly there. That's cool if you do. If not, though, you can find the Ropadope Radio platform on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, Player FM, Spreaker, Stitcher, TuneIn, and a host of all other places, too. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com, Eastside Boxing and Phil Boxing. And one more thing, get your TV together without the hassle of cable. DirecTV Stream. Stream the best entertainment and sports, starting with 75 live channels. Save $120 off the first year when you get any package and buy the DirecTV streaming device. There's no annual contracts, no hidden fees. Plus, learn how to get premium channels included for the first 3 months with qualifying packages. Sign up today, DirecTV Stream. Okay, so, you know, it was a light weekend, obviously. Pretty light weekend, to say the least. We did have William Zapata against Jaime Arboleda, I think it was, Arboleda. Not much to take from that fight early on. You know, he was bringing the pressure, landed left hands, whether they were straight or hooks, with maybe like 60 seconds or so early in that first round, big, big left hands. And he kind of followed it up with some body shots, straight left hands to the body. Thought he was doing a good job there. You know, as the second round came around as well, more lead left hands, right hooks. He landed a really nice right hook, Zapata did, during the exchange. And then I think it was a left hand to the body that had Arboleda taking a knee, then another left hand to the body in combination, scored the second knockdown. And then I think it was a left to the head and then to the body KO. Stop it. Real quick, like, didn't go that deep into it, that's for sure. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, not much to take out of main event. Talk about it a little bit here in just a moment when we bring in John, as far as, you know, hopefully he gets a fairly big fight coming up. You know, sometime he's probably got, what is it? He might have two fights left in the year, you know, if he's lucky. And if it's one big fight, then that'd be cool too. If it is just one more fight, though, you'd obviously like him, you know, to be able to step up. Diego De La Hoya got beat by Victor Morales, and it was pretty nasty. It was a left hook that scored a knockdown. The left hook in general for Morales was just terrorizing Diego. Diego, you know, hurt to the body, bloody nose. I think it was left hook in a right hand for the second knockdown, if I'm not mistaken. And, he didn't beat the count. He was sitting there waiting. He looked like he was kind of getting up, and he was done. So I did, put a little something on that, like I was talking last week on Victor Morales. I put a little something on it. It wasn't a huge underdog, but I, for one, will fully admit I didn't think it would play out like that, though. then it was, David Stevens and Parabon, Marcos Antonio Parabon. Parabon scored a knockdown, I believe it was the third round, kind of a cuffing left hook in the last maybe 12 to 15 seconds. He definitely got tested. He did get up from it. Wasn't a bad knockdown or anything like that. Kind of got going, and by the fifth or sixth round, he started using the left hook to the body, especially putting in a lot of body work. And I thought Stevens was a little bit busier overall, did the better work. But it was a good test, though. You know, it was definitely a good test from Parabon, who's, been around for quite some time. I kind of enjoyed that because I like seeing the prospects and I like, seeing them get tested. We also had Frederick Lawson on that card against, let me check my scorecard. Where did it go? Villalobos. Esteba Villalobos. I thought Lawson, it was, first of all, another good fight. I like this fight. I thought Lawson overall, landed the better shots. Probably one more rounds, although it was really close. In the last round, Villalobos, was able to get, like, corner Lawson, put him on the ropes, landed flush shots, a whole lot of them, bombing right hands on him. Lawson, I remember, did land a nice uppercut, get off the ropes. Those flurries with hooks, left hands, uppercuts, really came on down the stretch, especially in that last round. It was two cards had it 96-94 and one had it 97-93. I had Lawson, 6-4, 5-4-1, something like that. Once again, though, I thought that it was good. It was a good fight. It didn't blow me away or anything like that. But overall, like I said, pretty slow weekend. Not going to touch upon too many more items. We are going to get into Canelo Alvarez and John Ryder and maybe some other items as well with John. Let's go ahead and bring in John to the fold here. What's going on, John? How you doing?
Chris, great to be here as always. Just listening to your recap of the DAZN card last week. So I might as well jump in there because I didn't think it was much of a card. As I always say, I have to give Zepeda credit for just taking care of business. When a guy's in a relatively easy assignment like he was, Arboleda got stopped by Colbert, who's not a puncher, at 130 pounds. So, to me, it wasn't much of a fight. It was supposed to be the Ortiz-Stanionis card originally, and, of course, that fight fell out because of health reasons, going to get reset apparently. But still, this wasn't too good of a card. Zepeda did what he needed to do. We need to see him in with better opposition. Again, even with the lower level opposition, one thing that he did show, if you're looking for a positive, is, when he was first coming up, we were talking more about just his straight power. And then the more you watched him fight, he's more volume than he is power, especially as he stepped up his opposition. But, not that Arboleda, he certainly wasn't the best person he's fought or anything, but at least at least the power was there a little bit more. But what I disagreed with other boxing observers was, let's still keep this fight in perspective. You can't draw some of the things they were trying to draw about Zepeda from this opponent. I mean, you give him some points for taking care of business quickly, showing a little more power, but based on this opponent, be realistic. There's a ceiling on how much you could draw from that fight. I did, you know, get interested when David Stevens was added to the card. You know, he had that really good fight on Showbox where he had a competitive opponent with Hemp Hill and stopped them late. Really, really good fight. Really good finish. Very impressive. Only 22 years old, trained by Ronnie Shields. But this fight with Parabon was a disappointment. You know, he's only 22, and he was coming off a really good performance before this. It may not mean much down the road. I'll be the first to say that. But I'm not saying I took anything permanent from it. But I was disappointed with the performance. He was loading up on the right hand. I didn't see much other variety than coming from him. You know, I don't think Parabon was really looking to do all that much or win, but it wasn't quite a survival mode, a full survival mode. In other words, where I would say, well, there's really no way Stevens could get this guy out of here. He was in such a survival mode. Like I said, in the long run, might not matter that much, only 22, but I was really excited to see him again. And, you know, I'm still going to keep an eye on him, but I did feel that this was kind of a not moving forward performance. Especially, you know, getting on this DAZN card where there wasn't much else on there to get excited about. I think it kind of had the potential, of course, you're only dealing with hardcore boxing people, but that they would be paying attention to him. So I don't think it's a permanent setback or anything. I'm certainly not on the guy or anything like that. But you do have to take what you see. And I was disappointed in this particular performance of Stevens. I was expecting more coming off of that potentially star-making type performance against Hemp Hill on Showbox. So I did find it to be a little bit of a disappointment. Wasn't that much head movement from him, wasn't that much punch variety. Only 22, and you know, he's shown a lot of power in the past. He's got Shields. Hopefully, like you said, you know, maybe just this being a veteran and, you know, first time fighting this kind of a veteran, one of those kind of things. I would hope that for Stevens, but I was hoping for a little bit more in this one. It wasn't something that really moved him forward that much as you would have hoped. But that was about it for the DAZN card. I think it's worth an epilogue, and you were mentioned a little bit too, Chris, about some different things. But, you know, I did watch the replay of Tank and Garcia, you know, big enough of a fight. Thought it was worth on this one watching that replay. You know, like I always say, it's never quite the same as when you see something live and you don't know what's going to happen, but thought it was worth a rewatch. You know, I was thinking of what you said, and I saw Canelo, who ironically, I remember this now, hadn't talked about it last week or anything, but, you know, they asked Canelo maybe 6 months ago or so who he liked watch fighting, and it was kind of funny because he mentioned Tank was actually the guy he enjoyed liking to watch fight. So I know he follows him. And he was saying, as you said, you know, the fight was kind of interesting, but not a great thrilling fight, you know, that Tank's good. And on the rewatch, reminded me of that, you know, Tank, there was drama with, you know, that was the first knockdown he scored in the second round. That was a really big shot from Tank. You look at the replay, you know, with the kind of puncher he is, I mean, anybody could go down from that shot, even though that's the type of thing we were worried about Garcia going in. And then, you know, like you and I have been saying, you don't know what he felt with that seventh round body shot, but there weren't that many punches being thrown, you know, really in the rounds, other rounds. You know, you had, right after it happened, Chris, you had brought it up with me, and I do have to agree with you 100%, you know, on the rewatch, you know, especially with the way they've been scoring it, but even like you were saying, with not much else happening in the round, I mean, I don't know how that wasn't a 10-8 for Tank in the second with that big shot, never mind, you know, being a 10-10. I mean, that, you know, 10-9, that was a bizarre one. But then to me, now this is where I'm really going to be in a minority, because I'm not saying Garcia was doing anything great. But, you know, in those other rounds, I mean, Tank was way up on the scorecards. Then they had, to me, like the opposite. Like, they were giving Tank, you know, all the other rounds. But then the strange thing with the knockdown where they didn't give him the 10-8. But I just didn't think in the other rounds, and you know, even the commentary was saying, Tank's winning these rounds. I didn't think that much was really happening there. You know, I didn't think that that was that decisive. I'm not saying Garcia was winning them, but that really
was. You could have gave him the sixth round, I thought, Garcia.
Yeah.
I thought you could have gave that to him.
Yeah, I didn't think that was too much decisive action. And then one thing I noticed, you know, to Tank's credit and get him out of there, really, yeah, in the round where it ended and the round before, like you said, the sixth, I mean, and this to me was good skill because this is what you want to do against the southpaw. Garcia had found a home for his lead right hand, which is a traditional way to fight a southpaw, and it was working. And, you know, he's got hand speed. He was getting it in. It really looked like what he should be doing. I'm not saying this is why he got rid of him, but, you know, Garcia has been boxing, you know, the majority of his life. You know, he had the amateur pedigree. Again, people don't talk about it, but he did. One thing I'm not buying is I saw this from some people who, to me, kind of wanted to think they had some kind of premonition. And, you know, I don't think you were really talking this way either, Chris. Not saying that, I mean, it's fine to think Tank was better. Tank was the favorite, and, you know, Tank showed a lot of skill in this fight. But, like, I didn't see any lack of skill from Garcia. Like, some of these, I saw some of these pundits saying, oh, just like I said before the fight, you know, Garcia just doesn't have the skill level. And I'm like, I don't really know where you're getting that from. What I did see as, you know, you want to look at the flaw, what went wrong, and this is what I was going to get to about, you know, now we know since last week he's gotten rid of Gustin. I'm not, this is why, but Garcia has boxed his whole life, so even though he's only 24, who knows, maybe he does look at things like this. You know, what I kind of disagreed with, and this for me was a pre-fight thing, like, you know, you heard Gustin in the corner was kind of telling him to, like, go in and out with Tank. And, you know, I know, like, Garcia's got power and, you know, you want him to be able to land too, but he was the bigger guy. You know, it seemed to me the strategy was you just keep Tank totally on the outside, which, let's face it, Tank wasn't getting hit that much, but he wasn't doing much when he was on the outside either. But Garcia was trying to do this, like, coming in and unload, and, you know, Gustin was telling him that in the corner too, like, you know, go in and then go out, and Tank ended up catching him, you know, when he was going in. I mean, you know, with Tank and his power and speed, you know, and I agree with the takes that Tank's showing a ton of boxing IQ and boxing ability that I wasn't getting as sold on, you know, before this fight. I'd said it, but then punch stats were backing it up, and you could see it again in this fight. So that's there, but that's what I mean. Like, I don't think, you know, you could really jump in on Tank, especially early. And, you know, he ended up getting caught twice in time. So I think Garcia didn't really use the size fully. There were moments he was, and it was working good. But, you know, apparently the game plan was like a go in and out on Tank. And that's when, you know, Garcia was open up when he came in. And, you know, he got caught in the second. And then, you know, he got caught in the seventh and taken out. I don't think that part of the strategy was that good. I could see where you didn't want to maybe have Garcia give up his power offense, but he's the bigger guy, the taller guy. He's got the reach. You know, it would seem he should have been trying to just deploy that from the outside the whole time. So that was my take there on the rewatch, you know, about, you know, kind of how I think it played out. Now, you and I, Chris, agree. But you've still got people coming out, Canelo saying it within the last couple of days, joining the others. They're saying Garcia could have gotten up. Gustin's saying no, he couldn't have even now. You know, I'm, you know, you and I are looking at it the same. I mean, they're all saying that. I just don't think you can say it. I mean, didn't want to get up at that point. I don't know. Tank's too big of a puncher. I mean, I'm going to, like I said, that hasn't changed from last week. I just got to see more, you know, of Garcia down the road before I can draw that conclusion. And it's going to be apparently with a new trainer. So we're going to have to see who he comes up with.
Yeah, and there was also that whole, just to go back to the second round, maybe they thought Tank was more hurt than it appeared. You know, maybe that was part of it when he was holding and stuff like that. That could have played into that.
That one shot.
Maybe that's what they were thinking, you know?
But it was like Tank, you look on the replay, that was a big shot. It was a quick, but, you know, Tank's quick with those shots. That was a quick shot, took him out. You know, see, some of that, you know, that really, it reminded me, I mean, you know, Rowley wasn't doing bad until he got taken out. And, you know, the one that took him out was similar to that one that, in a way, that dropped Garcia in the second. You know, it wasn't like the one that took him out in the seventh, the body shot. But Rowley was doing well in the rounds before that, too. So just saying, again, strategy, you know what I mean? Like, and Rowley's not. He's not as long as Ryan Garcia, so, and he's kind of a wide puncher and things, so he would have more reason to be having to come forward. But I don't think Ryan Garcia really needed to do that even in spurts. I don't know. And for me, that part of it's not really hindsight. I do question a bit of that coming in and then going out strategy that they tried to employ.
Sure. And you were thinking just more at range, keeping behind the jab or bring pressure?
I was thinking when we talked, because, you know, you can look at our podcast the week before the fight. I thought of like a, you know, I believe in Tank's ability, but I just thought this might be a fight with both guys having ability that Garcia's size might make the difference. That doesn't always happen. Well, I thought he could outwork him from the outside. Yeah, what I thought, and,
right.
You know, to me, you could see where that would have been there, like, that Tank in this new outside boxer he's been doing, and he did that again in the fight, but he doesn't throw much when he's doing that. And that I thought all Garcia had to do was just keep it at arm's length, let Tank do that movement on the outside, not throwing, and rounds are going to go by. Yeah, that he would have more volume, keep it on the outside, and then maybe Tank to rush in or something later on and really commit to that. Like, you know, not that Tank's not capable of doing that. We saw him at times when he really needs to do it, moving the head and coming in, but it's not what he wants to do first anymore. So, but instead he was, you know, moving into Tank's range periodically, trying to open up and maybe thinking, you know, he could land his power, but that was a little too risky of a strategy for me. I thought just keep it outside, you know, Tank's not active enough from that scenario, and then you would really have Tank have to land one shot, but if you had him far enough away that maybe he couldn't land it. That's what I was thinking going in. So for me, that's not hindsight. They definitely had that as part of their strategy, but part of it, you listening in the corner, which I always really like hearing in the corner fights more than ever, because, you know, with modern technology, you really do want to see what they're trying to do and what's going on in there. And listening in, it seemed like it was go in, then go back out, you know, for Garcia. And he got caught, you know, twice when he was in. And that seemed to me to be the flaw in the game plan going in. You know, that's where I think that they were kind of flawed in that part of the game plan.
Yeah. Did you watch the epilogue too?
I did watch that's some special. Of that as well. Yeah, I did watch some of that as well. I figured, you know, big enough fight, I wanted to catch that.
Yeah,
and, you know,
I like when they do that stuff, too. It's kind of cool.
It was, and it was interesting in this one because, you know, of course, I haven't mentioned, you haven't, because you don't want to make too big of a deal out of it. I mean, they did mention this rib injury, but, you know, that's one of those deals. I want all the information, but it's too borderline for, I'm not going to take away from Tank on that or say it was just because I can't do it. Can't go that far. You know, I mean, it might have been there, but to say that that's why he got taken out, I can't go. I like to have all the information possible. I mean, you don't gain by not having information, but I don't know. I'm not going to, you know, I'm just going to take it for me right now on that too, that, you know, Tank took him out with a body shot. I mean,
right. Yeah, we're not going the other way and calling, you know, Garcia, you know, soft and all this other stuff either, you know? So it's like,
no, I'm not.
Kind of just staying like, well, we haven't seen an x-ray for the rib
right.
before or after. So we don't really know about that. And we also know that, you know, nicks and bruises and, you know, you get injured in camp. That's just how it goes. It's tough not to make it through a whole camp, not at least a little dinged up, just because of the, you know, the nature of the sport. So we see that all the time. I never, you know, a lot of people like to say the Manny Pacquiao Mayweather stuff in his shoulder, but yet, you know, when the fight's over, he's got his arms up high up, you know, and it's like, well, you know, I've messed up my rotator cuff just minorly, and there's no way I can lift it above my shoulder. And I didn't need, all I needed about 3 weeks of rehab. I didn't need any kind of surgery or nothing like that, but I couldn't do it. I couldn't put my arm up. I just couldn't, you know.
Right.
Not without a lot of pain anyway.
And they're not disclosing it on pre-fight forms or exams or anything like that. So, you know, you can't have it both ways. I mean, Lomachenko with Teofimo, you know, he's in the pre-fight interview. The shoulder's great. It's all fine. I'm good to go. It's feeling better than ever. I think that the track is now better than ever. And after the fight, it's, I had a horrible shoulder injury. I had to fight him with a horrible shoulder injury. And, you know, that's
although
why I
got better as the fight went on, too. It was really weird. Like,
right,
he didn't start fighting
until
the seventh round or something, you know? Like, how'd that work out, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah,
just, how'd that work
I don't
out?
Know. I mean, it happens, you know? Excuses are excuses. You know, I think a lot of people either, you know, I don't know. I just, a lot of, when millions of people are watching you fight, it can be embarrassing, it can be prideful, it can be a lot of different emotions. And sometimes people say stuff after the fight. We've seen that plenty of times. Some people still will say something about a fight. I'm talking about the actual fighter, not the fans. And it's just kind of like, whatever, dude, I get it. It is what it is. Some people are poor sports where they're just a poor loser. Some people make good points, whatever. It just, you know, I just can't blame an injury because – if you were injured so bad and you knew you were going in there with a rib injury, you should have said something and postponed it, you know. And I know the first thing will be like, well, we don't know when that fight would happen again, but there was a lot of money involved, and they had already seen what it was going to do at the gate, a lot of it. So they probably would have been able to postpone it at some point. Now, you could say, you know, let's say Tank goes away for 2-3 months. Okay, that would delay it, but – if it was that serious, don't get in the ring.
Right. And what I after all my years of watching it, what I've concluded, and this is the way I can feel better about it, I think there's truth to it. If it's not all the truth, it's a lot of it too. I mean, boxing's an individual sport where you can get seriously injured literally or get killed in the ring. I think these guys are obviously the top competitors to get to the point they're at. When they're going to go back in – they have to make themselves, at the least, they have to make themselves believe that to get back in there. Like, in other words, you know, and that's why we've seen it from all the greats. I mean, you know, like, okay, you know, like Ryan Garcia, and this is Ryan Garcia and all top fighters, you know, when they start this stuff after the fight with the excuses, they can't be going into the next one, or sometimes they're even going to have a rematch with the same guy in the next fighter down the road. They have to believe that, to believe there's going to be something different the next time so they can change it. Go in there with a mentality, gosh, this guy knocked me out before, you know, with a vicious body shot, and I got to fight him again. You know, what's going to change? In other words, that's not a really good attitude to be going in with, but, you know, they can go into to get their confidence back up. Ah, my rib was hurt that last time, and rib's going to be fine next time, and it's going to be a different story. With, you know, if I fight Tank again or fight somebody else, and you know all the greats do. I mean, when Sugar Ray Leonard got knocked out by
all the greats,
you know, Camacho, right? He said that it was because he had a calf injury all camp, and it was just that calf. It wasn't that he was over the hill, and he might have to get a rematch with him because it was all about the calf. I mean, I'm not making this up. I mean, you know, and Duran had to know Moss, whatever that was about, and you know, I mean. It's just, I mean, these are like, we're talking about the greatest living fighters of all time, you know? I mean, Foreman, I want to get into the big George Foreman later while we're on tonight, too, because I got to see the movie, but it reminded me of it, because it's another good example. Of course, we don't talk about this part now, and that part isn't in the movie, but it happened. I mean, Foreman said after, you know, Ali beat him, they drugged his water, you know? Vladimir Klitschko said Brewster drugged his water. I mean, the Klitschko fans talking about a class act and everything, they don't like to go back and talk about that. I mean, you can find the newspaper quotes on that, and he even had his lawyer go to the commission and everything. I mean, you know, these are guys who were some of the top fighters in their division, you know, the greatest of all time. These are things that they've said. You know, they're on the record. So before you go too off on Ryan Garcia, I mean, think of boxing history. Guys that are at the top level, they have to make them. It's just such a dangerous sport. There's no teammate in the ring with you. In other words, that's what's different than team sports. I mean, there's nobody else in the ring with you when you're going to go back in there. So you can't blame a teammate. I mean, you got to find something there, some reason why it happened to keep that confidence you need to be in the ring. So I think that's why we see this from, you know, top and great fighters throughout boxing history.
Yeah, like you said, once you get to watching it long enough, you hear the variety of reasons or excuses or whatever. And sometimes reasons that get pushed to the side as excuses, then in a rematch, you're like, well, if someone did something different, and you're like, okay, well, now that makes more sense because you can see he's clearly using his right hand more or whatever. You know, there are times where, like Mayweather Castillo, you know, clearly there was something up with his shoulder. It is what it is. But he rematched him and looked better in the rematch. So it is what it is, like you said. And I think people just can't separate the fandom slash like what we've been talking about lately, documenting betting. You know, I'm mad at this fighter because I lost money on him.
Right.
You know, that's starting to play a larger role than it used to anyway. As far as like online, I mean, obviously, you know, that's always been there if you've watched fights with people, you know, or you've made personal bets with someone right in the same room and they may say something or I may say something that's probably over the top, and it basically just comes down to the competitive nature of betting or being mad that you lost or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, it is what it is, and you know, that's just part of it. You know, you can't – I don't know. I just think it is what it is. Yeah, that pretty quiet weekend, obviously. Like you said, we had a banger of a great matchup on paper that got postponed, and now it looks like, what was it, July 8th or something like that? I think it's July 8th where they're going to have the rematch with Ortiz and Stanonius. I think it's July 8th.
Yeah, it just did get rescheduled, which actually, with the way Ortiz health's been, that it actually – surprised me a bit that it was rescheduled.
Yeah.
One thing I was happy for it was I thought maybe I'd be the last guy, and frankly, I don't blame one bit people that dropped it. I think there's every reason to drop it, but I haven't dropped my DAZN, so like when they put something on there, I'm like, okay, at least I got, you know, they got to start, and like you said, the Munguia fight, you know, it's not that all of them are spectacular. You want that a month for it, but I need them to show me they're putting, you know, they're still setting fights up and still, you know, putting fights on there that appeal to U.S. fans. Like I told you, it's got some use as a boxing fanatic to, you know, watch the fights from the U.K. when they put them on there on Saturday afternoons. Got used to that, but you know, it's more than it should be, and you hate to be paying for all this stuff. So. When I saw that, I was like, yeah, you need to keep adding some fights. So I was kind of pleasantly surprised, but let's see if it comes off, because hopefully Ortiz is okay.
Yeah, definitely. And that, yeah, both of them come off some weird stuff that just jumps up. Obviously the Ortiz one, you know, is more serious in the fact that, you know, given what he does for a living, you know, he's really got to watch being over-trained and overworked. But it's like, well, that's kind of you try to get right up to that buffer and peak. You know, you don't want to peak in camp, obviously. But I don't know, the way he said that he just was in camp too long waiting for the schedule to get, you know, made, or his fight to get made and whatnot all the way. But, yeah, I hope the best for him. He's a young fighter with a lot of ability and a lot of potential in the future, to be a guy around for a while. But yeah, when that was back to back, it's like, man, I wonder if, I don't know. It's going to be hard to legislate that, you know, his whole career. And the bigger the fight, the more you're just going to anticipate to work harder in camp and be long, you know, an extra couple of weeks, whatever. I don't know. So we'll see. Hopefully that, but it does kind of even it out a little bit coming off of what Stanonius is coming off of. But yeah, I hope Ortiz, let's hope he doesn't have any more problems in the future with this thing. But man, it's hard to believe that he won't, you know, really.
Yeah, he's going to have to show he's
okay.
He
does for a living.
Yeah, he might.
Yeah,
need
he might have
more.
To like. He might have to like really be in tune with the doctor during camp or something. You know, I don't know. I don't know the details of everything, but based off what I've learned on it, it's a touchy feely thing that, you know, I don't know. I don't know if he's gonna be able to have the career he probably could. We'll see.
Yeah, in the short term, he's going to have an impressive performance against Stanionis, have the fight come off and be impressive, because we know Stanionis is a real opponent, a tough opponent. So, you know, that would kind of silence some questions, but that's not going to be an easy assignment to do. It makes it interesting. There really is a lot on the line with that fight.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And then Canelo, obviously returning home, first fight since Curvet Cintron. I think it was 2011, November 2011, if I remember correctly. Looking it up the other day, against John Ryder, who, you know, it is what it is. It does kind of just feel like a get back type fight. You haven't fought since September. He had an injury. But just kind of like getting a fight to get another fight this September. And, you know, Canelo's fought, you know, his resume, win, lose, or draw, is so deep that it's very rare that I would get overly critical of him, especially if he does do what he said he's going to do in September and fight Bivol, whether it's at 75 or 68, whatever. This fight doesn't bother me. Now, obviously, being on pay-per-view, we've discussed this over the last year and change, where there are some times where a pay-per-view comes along and you're like, I'm good. Or I was just saying earlier in the show before you came on, John, no one's, you know, texted me or called me about this pay-per-view saying, hey, man, I already got it rented. You want to come over? Blah, blah, blah. I'm having some people over. Or, you know, I may actually, if I get off in time, I may go to this bar restaurant where that place Canelo fights all the time, and it's usually packed, but this isn't a major fight, so maybe I could sneak in there or someone just pops up and we split the fee for it. Like I said, it's not a money thing. It's always an entertainment value thing. It's something we've been talking about, like I said, for a little bit. And, you know, without like a legit co-feature, it is kind of, you know, this is the type of main event opponent that you'd like a really good co-feature on. In the same breath, I understand that Canelo's money is the you know, the bulk of this thing, obviously, and that's why it's on pay-per-view too, just so they have some revenue coming back. But you know, even if they had a smaller weight marquee matchup on it, would have been great, because we know those aren't as expensive. Now, there are, you know, so there's an interesting fight there, but it's not like a co-feature that really grabs you. Like, I think that Gabriel Valenzuela and Steve Spark, that's an evenly fight match. I think it's probably going to be pretty good. It should be action-packed. But there's just not that co-feature there. And, you know, usually if we don't have that co-feature, then the main event is like, all right, but the main event's awesome. And that's just not the case. You know, John Ryder, definitely on paper, if you go to BoxRec, I mean, he's definitely coming off his best two wins in Daniel Jacobs and Zach Parker. The Zach Parker fight didn't go that long. Parker, I think it was his right hand, he basically retired. The Jacobs fight was a split decision. It could have went either way. Many people thought Jacobs won the fight, and I think that's fair, but honestly, I thought it was a stalemate. There really wasn't much to it. In my opinion, I would have been fine with the draw. Obviously, you know, where the fight took place, you know, helps. But it's funny because I think his best performance he's had as a pro personally was against Callum Smith. Now, he lost it, and some people thought he won. Not to say that you have to go that far. I don't think it was a 9-3 or 8-4 fight. I thought it was more like 7-5, especially 9-3. I thought 9-3 was way too far in that one. But I thought he kind of, to me, especially because at least Cammy Smith was a higher level guy than some of the other wins. He lost a close one, the Rocky Fielding, and I remember Nick Blackwell way back in the day, like 2014-15. That's actually when he started getting on my radar. But yeah, funny enough, I think in that losing effort, that may have been his best performance, because at least against a top-level guy, because he was able to get inside, he was able to get, you know, a lot of good work in, a lot of good body work, and trap Callum for a lot of that fight on the ropes. And like I said, if someone thought he won, okay, that's fine. I'm not saying that hands down I thought Ryder won, that's for sure. But I did think that may have been his best performance. But, you know, to me, it does seem like a placeholder-type fight, and it's more about, okay, is he going to fight Bivol next, and what's he going to do to compete at that, you know, in that fight at a higher level, no matter what weight class it is. Well, what are your thoughts coming into Canelo Ryder? I do like the idea that they're selling that it's a homecoming. I think that's long overdue for him. I understand why he hasn't gone there, because of the money at the MGM and other places. I totally get it, but I'm just not all that excited, you know, because Canelo, he's faced so many great fighters that this one doesn't really do a whole lot for me. I don't think it's as shitty as people are talking about, but anytime it's on pay-per-view, people are going to, you know, have a little bit more of an eye on something as far as critical.
Yeah, Chris, part of it I agree with you, part of it I look at it a little differently. The part I agree, I've always been pretty much a Canelo fan. I agree with you. When we look at modern boxing, you know, if you're going to be fair, you know, his resume as to who he's fought is better than anybody else. So you always have to keep that in mind. You know, like when you're about to get critical like I am on something like this. So, you know, you don't want to be too hard on him because of that, because I do agree with the argument that when you take who he's fought and his resume, and he is just coming off Bivol, and even though it was an older Golovkin, it's still Golovkin. I mean, he's got power and a chin, even at 40, you know, that even though Canelo made that one very easy, there's still going into the fight some danger there, and you and I agreed on that too, you know. You know, to me, this one, I feel like where I disagree is I just feel like this fight is pretty much garbage and being made out to be even more than it is. I know where people are coming from, and this is where I got to get on my traditional, you know, platform with. But to me, it's a fight that is an example of it. Too many belts, too many weight classes. You know, I don't really think you need a, you know, I know you don't. I mean, it was just an alphabet creation. You know, you don't need a 168. Let's look at Canelo at light heavy for a moment. He already fought two guys who were in the top three at worst at light heavy, and he knocked out Kovalev. And, you know, Bivol, he went the distance. He lost the decision. Bivol definitely won the fight. But I think you and I saw that one the same in that sense. Like, but, you know, some of these people that don't like Canelo are more the European fans who tend to prefer the European-based fighters. I think, you know, like they make, like, you know, Canelo got embarrassed or something like that. I mean, Bivol doesn't knock anybody out. He didn't hurt Canelo at all in the fight. So what I'm just saying here is, if we were back to 8 or 9 weight classes and you didn't have a 168 and there was a light heavy, I mean, Beter Biev would be the champ. Bivol would be like 1. Canelo, even after that decision loss, would be like 2. Then I think realistically, like a Benavidez would be like 3. You know, And you go down the line, here's what I'm getting to. John Ryder's not ranked, okay? So because I know you're always, you know, people are going to throw these arguments at me then, like, well, you say you don't like this fight, but Canelo's undisputed. You know, he's got all the alphabet belts at 168. And
he's the mandatory.
And Ryder's ranked. Right, right, exactly. You know what I'm getting at, because we have to hear it all the time. And you know, right, Ryder's the mandatory, and he wants to keep that WBO belt. But what I'm saying is, look, forget the alphabet stuff, all the weight classes. You know, if there was 8 or 9 weight classes, when I say 9, I mean, you know, I think you can make an argument with how big everybody's gotten. You need a cruiserweight. I'm okay with that. So when I say the 8 or 9, that's what I mean. If you want to say we have to have a cruiserweight now, okay. You know, I'm not going to fight you hard on that, but you don't need the other ones. And that includes a 168. So, you know, so even let's throw out alphabet rankings. So, you know, Ryder with 17 weight classes, I mean, you know, transnationally, he's maybe like 6 or something like that. I'd have to go look at it. You know, okay, but that's with 17 weight classes. And what I'm saying is, you know, if you're going back 35 years when you didn't have a 168, this guy's not ranked. And, you know, then you get into his, then you get into his performances. Like you said, you know, I think most people do treat it like the Caleb Smith fight was his best performance. And I'm not saying he didn't make the fight tight, he did, but that was a fight to me where there was nothing going on. And I've said this before, I'll say it again, this is my view on the fight. And then Ryder was kind of like there in the 10th round, and this is actually to his credit. Hey, I'm going to pick it up. Nothing's going on in this fight. This guy's not doing much. He's not hurting me. You know, there might not be much to be afraid of here. I'm going to actually let my hands go. And you let his hands go in the 11th and 12th and took those rounds. And but, you know, as you and I know, Chris, you got to score the whole fight, you know. And you know, those weren't 10-8 rounds or anything. And, you know, so you got to score the whole fight. 2 rounds doesn't get you the fight. Now, I'm not saying Ryder only won 2 rounds, but I'm just saying that's the way I saw that one. I think where Ryder deceives people is he moves forward, but punch stat numbers do support what I'm saying here. The guy does not throw. You know, people look at him and they stereotype and they think, oh, here's this 5'9", 168-pound guy. He walks forward. You know, he's this aggressive, stalking volume guy who's going to make a great fight. That's not John Ryder, okay? That's why I have problems with this fight. I mean, everything this guy does, Canelo can do better. And I mean everything. There's not one category or one thing John Ryder does better than Canelo. That's what I mean. Like, he doesn't out-volume him. He doesn't out-power punch him. He doesn't out-chin him. You know, he doesn't have size on him. He's even older than him. And so you have Ryder coming in, this Zach Parker, you know, he says he broke his hand, he quits. I mean, he did quit. I mean, let's face it, you see the fight, the guy quit. I mean, nothing was really going on there. That's not John Ryder's fault, okay? You know, he gets a win. I mean, I'm not holding that against John Ryder, but I'm just saying, like, what was that, you know? The Jacobs fight, I saw just the way you did. I mean, I thought Jacobs won it, but not much went on. I mean, Jacobs was certainly at the end of the line. Jacobs is also a very low volume puncher. You know, Caleb Smith wasn't throwing a lot at 168. You know, Ryder's not this aggressive, high volume guy that I think a lot of people just look at him and they stereotype and they think he is. So that's the thing. Like, I don't know what been here. You know, so then again, with all the alphabet stuff and everything, they, you know, alphabet stuff here and there, too many weight classes, they get into this kind of spin like John Ryder deserves this, you know? I mean, you know, myself,
right,
nothing against John Ryder, but there's a lot of fighters out there I would like to see get the Canelo lottery before John Ryder gets it, okay? You know, that's me. I mean, you know, a lot better fighters, let's face it. So, you know, because, you know, Ryder, he's got plenty of losses on this record, so you know, to me, it's not that much of a Cinderella. Like, I'm excited to see John Ryder get this big Canelo payday. I mean, I know, you know, he's an Eddie Hearn guy, so Eddie Hearn, you know, that, and that's where a lot of this stuff comes from. I mean, you know, this stuff does matter in a fight like this, Chris, and you and I talk about this stuff. I mean, there does seem to be some evidence. Like, I mean, Canelo apparently, like, likes dealing with Hearn. I mean, I've been ready to believe that over these last few fights because we're kind of seeing evidence of it. And, you know, maybe Canelo's obviously got some kind of reason for that. But, like, you know, Hearn's taking advantage of that and taking other guys he's got. And hey, he's delivering for them. I mean, that's what he's supposed to do. He's their promoter. So, you know, he's got Bivol's fighting. I got to say it because it's a fact. I mean, it's just a damn fact. Bivol's fighting below Campbell Hatton on Hearn's cards. I mean, he's fighting below Campbell Hatton. We're not making this stuff up. Craig Richards in boring fights below Campbell Hatton. And Hearn gets him a Canelo payday then. So, you know, hey, Bivol gets a win out of it. Of course, you know, he's happy with that. So now John Ryder, he's like, hey, you know, Eddie Hearn's got me Canelo. You know, of course he's happy. So is Billy Joe Saunders. He's happy. I don't know that there's U.S. fans that want to see these fights. There's really not. So this is in that line. And, you know, I've been saying this as, you know, for a while. I think this has been a good example. Like, look, I got to give credit. Like, Canelo was on a Mick Ultra ad during the Super Bowl. I mean, there's no higher U.S. marketing than the Super Bowl. So let's say that and get that out of the way. I mean, that's good. But with that understood, you know, I've said this a million times, Chris, as you know, like, I don't know if Canelo, like, doesn't fully – I mean, he spends all this time in San Diego. You think he'd get it. He speaks English well. He's showing that now. He let it out. Like, you know, it seems almost hard to believe he wouldn't get his own U.S. marketing, you know what I mean? But it always seems that way. You know, he's fought, what, is it the eighth British fighter he's fighting now? You know, he's all these fights on DAZN, you know, with Hearn. I mean – coincides the topics right now with this face of boxing argument. I just like it as kind of like that is a good way to start the argument about this. Like, so now Tank's coming off a 1.2 with Ryan Garcia, Mexican American, and Canelo's going to fight on DAZN against John Ryder. You know, I mean, this lack of, you know, it's the Plant fight. You know, he got into the U.S. realm. He's fighting Plant with PBC Showtime, but then he's back with the DAZN. He's been doing that. Like, I just think he's neglected his U.S. marketing so much in a large part where there's opportunity there. I mean, you know, I've said a lot of times too, look, I know, you know, I mean, he gets $25 million, you know, on Mexican TV. You know, it's for free there. I mean, you know, he's Mexican. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, maybe he looks at it and says, hey, you know, I get my viewership there. But, you know, with all the time he spends in the U.S. and everything, it just seems to me funny that as his career has gone on and where I would look at it like a neglect compared to where he was, like he fought James Kirkland, you know, in Minute Maid Park in Houston, sold out the stadium, and what did he get, 2.4 on HBO, which is premium subscription? You know, what's that? You know, that's years back. But then, like, what if we haven't gotten much like that since. And – you know, I don't know if he just doesn't care or he's getting bad advice there. But I don't really care for this fight too much.
Yeah, I'm definitely, like I said, there's no big co-feature that really is like, all right, well that okay, I'll do it. Or, you know, it is one of those that pretty sure I'm going to be on the bench, but yeah. You know, it's tough to say. It's only Thursday. I do have some stuff going on that night, but not late. So, yeah, you know, it kind of depends on, you know, like I said, if I get a message saying, hey, after work, we're watching it or blah, 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 you know, that type of thing, give an excuse to go out to that bar or something, have a couple drinks and meet up with some people I haven't seen in a while or something like that. But, yeah, it doesn't really scream much at it. I mean, what are your thoughts? You think that Callion Smith, or not Callion Smith, but you think John Ryder's going to do what he did against Callion Smith? That's what I was trying to talk about, where he, like, pressed the issue, was able to get him on the ropes. I just don't see Ryder as, like a Golovkin, especially in the first fight. Remember when Golovkin, behind that jab and pressure, was able to get Canelo on the ropes the whole lot and had him moving a ton that fight? I mean, that's what, you know, his promoter Eddie Hearn is saying. He's saying that, you know, I'm basically just going to press him, you know. And my thing is, okay, you know, that's probably your best way to win, but that kind of falls into the natural counter-punching ability you know, of Canelo, you know, so going right to him, I don't think that's going to last. I really kind of think, you know, first, how do you think this will play out? And then, you know, I'm looking at my bookie. It says 8.5. Are you over? Are you under? What are your thoughts on this just going in? Like I said, it's not many people think it'll be really competitive beyond maybe, you know, the first couple rounds or something like that. Canelo at times can be a slow starter. But what are your thoughts? You think Ryder can have some success, you know, trying to crowd him, get on the inside? Or you think it'll be, you know, it's giving me vibes of if it goes the distance, like 10-2, 9-3-ish, you know? I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I think Canelo's taking this guy out early. I think Ryder does that, but he doesn't do it like Hearn's talking and stuff. Like I said, watch John Ryder's fights. He steps forward, but he doesn't do a lot. He's a bluffer. He's a bluffer like that. So I agree with you, Chris. Like, I think that is almost tailor-made for Canelo because Canelo likes to counter. You know, he's more of a counter guy. And for Ryder, taking a step forward but not being a puncher. I mean, look, Canelo's got arguably the best chin in boxing. It's either him or Golovkin. And I would argue that – and I don't think Canelo's gotten enough credit for this, frankly. I mean, Golovkin does hit harder than Canelo. So I look at it, and, you know, Canelo went 3 fights with Golovkin without hitting the canvas. So, you know, then people say, no, Golovkin's got the best chin in boxing. They're like, to me, I look at it like, nah, you know, I think I can make the argument at this stage it's actually Canelo. But if you said Golovkin or Canelo, it's going to be either of those two guys at this stage. They're going to get it. So we got a non-puncher who doesn't throw a lot of volume despite the fact that he steps forward. And he's fighting a guy who's got the best chin in boxing, who hits harder than him and who's faster than him, who's younger than him. I see this kind of like, even though the styles are different, started thinking of this as this one comes up, Chris, and kind of what I see, like, of course, Golovkin and Ryder are totally different fighters, and Golovkin's a 10 times better fighter. And I know Golovkin was 40, but Ryder's 34, and he's not near as good as Golovkin or have the amateur pedigree or anything like that. Now, he doesn't throw as much as Golovkin, so in that sense, he's less open. But, like, I'm looking at it this way, like, what's to prevent Canelo from hitting Ryder like at will, like he was Golovkin in that third matchup when, like I said, and I'm not exaggerating at all, at the 8th round, Golovkin fans walked out of the theater that I was at. I mean, they were cheering for Golovkin.
Right.
They got quiet, and it got to the 8th round. They literally walked out of the theater.
They saw the writing on the wall.
Right. I mean, that's how dominant it was at that point to the naked eye without seeing those whack scorecards where, you know, it's like the judges heard all this noise against Canelo all those years and tried to turn it the other way based on the noise or something because, that you know, those were terrible cards. So, you know, the naked eye, you watched 8 rounds. And so I'm thinking, like, look, I know it's a 40-year-old Golovkin, but still, he can hit and he's got a chin. Like, What's John Ryder? Like, that's where you look at an 8.5, and I'm thinking, like, John Ryder is going to go through 8.5 of that? Nah. He doesn't throw as much as Golovkin, so in that sense, he's not as open, but he doesn't have the chin. He doesn't have the ability of Golovkin, even at 40. So I figure the home turf kind of thing, like they say, sometimes it cuts a little both ways where you see performances where somebody feels pressure, but I'm thinking for Canelo, that's probably an advantage to him because, like, with the money he's made fighting a guy like Ryder who he normally wouldn't be able to probably get up for, you know, I'm also, this is in my analysis, I'm thinking maybe the fact that it's in Mexico gets him up a little more for Ryder than he would be and makes him just want to blow the guy out of there. I mean, I think this could be a rocky field, you know, this could be a rocky fielding Canelo type replay.
Sure.
Because Callum Smith at 168, you know, it might have been making the weight. Again, like you and I said, Chris, you don't like to go with the excuses, but the guy has looked better at light heavy, you know, with McGirt. Let's face it, Callum Smith, I mean. So, you know, maybe he was a little drained. Like, because there were fights at 168. Like, when he fought Mickey Holtzkin, you know, years ago, you couldn't fathom it either. And that's not a great fighter. That's a former kickboxer. And he laid on the ropes all that fight, too. And, you know, was letting Holtzkin throw at him and stuff like that. And, you know, he would have performances like that. Just saying, like, again, I don't think a lot of this is right, you know, a lot of this is Ryder. I mean, you know, the Zach Parker, the guy quit, the Jacobs, I'm with you, you know. I thought Jacobs edged it, but nobody did anything decisive in that fight. But, of course, that includes Ryder. So, you know,
yeah.
You know, where's the...
Right, yeah, exactly. Know, that's the problem.
Yeah, like you were alluding to with the Calvins. Where's the Ryder performance here that people are drawing on that says he's going to be competitive? Where I see people like... I've seen people say from the day this fight was signed, oh, Canelo hasn't been looking as good. Better watch this one. And I'm like, no, not with John Ryder. You know, that's when he's fighting the younger guy, you know, who's in his 20s or something like that. That's where you look if he fights a Benavidez or something like that. That's not Ryder. You know, Ryder's not that guy. Ryder's not that guy. So I just, you know, and look, and if you even want to look at the Callum Smith thing, like most people who would be a Ryder-type backer on the odds on this would, Chris, look what Canelo did to Callum Smith. He dominated the guy over 12 rounds. So,
yeah, it was like 12-zip legit.
Right, that was like a legit 12-zip. So, you know, and look, Ryder lost to Rocky Fielding, right? So, I mean, it's not looking good for Ryder. I do agree Canelo's probably starting to show some fade. And, you know, you and I said it after the Bivol, you have to wait and see. But then when he didn't get Golovkin out of there, even as good a chin as Golovkin has, right, you were looking at that a little bit. So, yeah, you know, the argument that maybe he started to decline, I think that's legit. But, again, Ryder's not the guy. I mean, I look at this something like, I think this is in boxing history what you do have to look at. Like, Larry Holmes took out David Bay. You know what I'm saying? And, like in perspective of that time to me, like, David Bay was better than John Ryder, to me, you know? Like, so I'm just saying, though, like, Holmes was still able to take out David Bay. You know, that was his last, you know, KO the first time around, I think, right? So, you know, like, that's what I mean. Like, it's got to be somebody, but then, you know, Michael Spinks beat him. You know what I mean? Like, it's got to be somebody good enough to take advantage of the decline. And you know, that's not Ryder. So, I mean, that's my analysis in this. Yeah, 8.5. You know, with Canelo, you're right. Sometimes he steps off the gas and things, so you worry about that. But I wouldn't feel good banking on John Ryder. I see people talking distance and stuff. I don't see it. I'd feel a lot better with the under on this one.
There you have it. Any other items that you'd like to discuss, sir?
Yeah, Chris, I'd like to just, before I go, think it's a good topic because I saw it on Sunday. And since we know the story, I don't have to worry about spoiling it. That's why I thought it was good to do, too. You know, I saw Big George Foreman, the movie, on Sunday. You know.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Followed Foreman extensively, read two of the books he's got out there. Got to meet him, had my picture taken with him when he was doing the HBO commentary for the Galata Grant fight in Atlantic City. And he was real cool then. You know, it was the amiable George and all that stuff. And I saw the movie. It was better than I expected. You know, the acting was real good. A lot of lesser known actors with great performances. And, you know, Forrest Whitaker, who's always good, was playing Doc Broaddus in there. And, you know, they had to take some liberties because you only got 2 hours and 6 minutes and had a couple composite characters in there. But I thought the movie was a lot better than I expected. You know, some of the critics that were saying, like, you know, they didn't show Foreman and Norton or Foreman and Lyle. You know, I would have liked to see stuff like that and the Foreman Cooney. But, you know, they only had 2 hours and 6 minutes. And I thought they did a really good job with the story and the performances were good. Movie was a lot better than I thought, so I'm recommending it. And I saw, like, what some of the critics didn't like about it was, like, well, we kind of didn't learn enough about them, the intricacies, especially in the second half of the story. But this is what I want to say, having read Foreman's books, watched a lot of interviews, watched all his fights, you know, definitely, you know, as time has gone on, you know, two of my top hero boxers of all time, got to be Ali and Foreman. You know, Duran's another one of my all-time favorites. Hearns, I always like. But, you know, just saying, like, definitely one of the subjects that I've studied in boxing. And, you know, I think what they're getting at is something that nobody really has. Like that's what George won't give you. He doesn't give you that in those books. Interviews, I see Dodge as the subject. It's funny because you think it'd be something he'd want to talk about, but he kind of won't. He won't talk where that real drive and willpower, you know, comes from. You know, he'll talk about God and the religion and some. And I'm not saying that for him. That's not a part of it. But like, he won't get deep into that. And you know, Larry Merchant was critical of George a lot of times in the comeback, but I think Merchant did always have a good way of summing things up. And I remember he started to say this in the latter part of his comeback, and he said it even before he knocked out Moore in that fight. You know, Larry was saying, you know, you could see he had finally come in awe of it, which I see that too, like the willpower. And that's why, you know, they didn't show the Lyle fight. Like, you know, when Foreman's first career ended, you just always got to talk of him in two careers. You know, he was done for 10 years, so we really were looking at it then in hindsight, like he's done, this is what Big George was, and it was kind of looked at like, you know, a guy who didn't have the stamina, who when he couldn't take you out early, you know, like he kind of wilted, you know, like that was kind of the synopsis of him, you know, what his career was, and he just had some power. But, you know, when we saw the second career and we put it all together, this dude had a lot of willpower, you know, and, you know, a tremendous amount of willpower. He never quite tells you. So I could see that being kind of missing from the movie. But to me, like, there's no George material really out there where you could get that from. I mean, somebody would have to do an unauthorized thing of him where they go interviewing everybody, you know, who knew him growing up and, you know, all kinds of people, ex-trainers, ex-wives, ex-everybody. I'm just saying that's a lot of work, you know, unless you're writing an unauthorized biography of them. That material's not really out there to draw from. So that was kind of, to me, the only thing missing from the movie. I still give it a, you know, a thumbs up where I liked it, but I could see where that was a little bit missing. But I thought they handled the stuff about his part of his religion well. They had it in there, but they didn't make like anything automatically happen miraculously. Like they didn't take it that far or anything like that. They just, you know, put the facts out there and kind of had George the way he would talk about those things in there. And I thought it was really good overall, but I think the part we're missing about George Foreman, he's 74 now. I'd like to hear him talk about it. He kind of doesn't talk about where that inner drive comes from. And, you know, like to hear that, or maybe some who know him, who think they might know where that comes from. Cause you know, that's really the most amazing comeback in all of sport. So as far as I'm concerned, and not just because we follow boxing, I just think it is. I mean, to be out of the ring 10 years, to win the real title 20 years.
Yeah, especially in a sport like that, you know, that's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. And one thing, I can't remember who said this, but I was always wondering about that inner Foreman. And it was somebody in boxing, too. I think, I don't know if I raised it on a social media thing some years ago or read it. I can't remember who said it, but they did get kind of what I was talking about. And they said, this is funny because this is when it was Fuzzy George, you know, in the second comeback.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Being all, you know, friendly with everybody and stuff like that. And somebody was around him, and they said a guy went up to him, and he touched George's belly. And this was the second George. And George said, dead serious, not kidding around, said, put your hand on my motherfucking belly. I was thinking that's that guy in there deep. That's what I'm talking about. Like, and I'm not saying,
right,
you know, it's automatically the anger thing that people would talk about, but there's some guy in there. That's what I mean. Like, you know, there's some guy in there, and he was still there in the second, you know, in the comeback, but he was kind of holding, you know, didn't let that out. And I just always wonder exactly who that guy is, you know, who is that guy?
Yeah, that's a good call. That's a really good call. That's a good point. Because, yeah, there had to have been, you know, yeah, where does that come from? Yeah, that is true. Because you got to have drive to do what he did, especially that long. And to be fair, you know, he speaking of bellies, you know, he didn't look in that great of shape, you know. Like, when you see him, you're like, man, this guy's way different. And I remember that Holyfield fight thinking, man, he's going to get his ass kicked, you know? Thinking, I don't know if I want to watch this. This could get bad, you know? And then enough,
everybody
he gives him a hell of a fight, you know?
Yeah, everybody thought he was going to wanted to see it, but thought he was going to get killed. It did great on pay-per-view, but nobody thought he was going to win. I mean, and he gave him a great – and then who would have thought he comes back, he keeps going, and he ends up winning the real title after being off for 17 months and coming off a loss to Tommy Morrison. And I didn't get that in there too, but, yeah, it's that drive. And, you know, Merchant was talking about that a little bit. And after being critical of George, even though he worked with him commentary, he was getting critical of him in the comeback, but – he was saying that at the end, and that was the right take on that, that Merchant was kind of picking up on that. Like, you know, this guy's got some kind of will in there. And that, yeah, that was a little bit missing from the movie, but I thought everything else was really good because the stuff they didn't get in there, you know, boxing fans, of course, are going to notice that. But, you know, you got 2 hours and 6 minutes. They've got to sell it, too.
Right.
I mean, it's a boxing movie. If they go 3.5 hours, I mean, who in the general public's going to go?
Yeah, it's very true. Very true.
So, but I recommend it. It's actually, for me, though, a thumbs up because obviously people listening to the show are going to be boxing fanatics pretty much. So I say go see
right.
it. I think it was worth it. So I enjoyed the movie. So I think that was in it. But I think that maybe critics that don't know the deep part about the boxing, they're kind of sensing that. And that's to me, is something like I'm like, well, I knew that watched him, but you just, there's nowhere really to get that material, you know, because George was the executive producer on the movie too. So, you know, if Big George is going to be given the final approval, you got to go with, you know, what he's saying, what Big George is saying the story is. So, you know, and I'm not saying that stuff they had in there was true, but that's the part, you know, or based on truth, but that's the part that's a little bit missing, but I still liked it.
There you have it. I appreciate you stopping by on a random night, and have yourself a good night.
All right, Chris. Thanks for having me, as always.
All right. Take it easy.
Have a good one.
All righty. I don't know. Something tells me this fight's going to go over. Kind of, I'm on the fence right now. But I think I'm going to go over 8.5. Can it make it to 9? I don't know, man. But, yeah, beyond maybe a round or two, you know, for Ryder early. You know, Canelo, not that Canelo gives away multiple rounds or even necessarily gives away the first round like, let's say, Chavez Sr. would. He basically kind of give away the first round. I don't know. I could see Ryder, you know, doing something there, and I do think he's going to have to crowd him. And could he use roughhouse tech, you know, tactics and whatnot? I don't know. I don't really see like I said, his best path of victory is something that just plays right into Canelo's hands because he doesn't have that power, you know. And even with power and a great jab like Golovkin had, now you could say he won the fight, but, you know, draw or whatever, technically, right? You go to box rec, most people thought Golovkin won that first fight. But Alvarez would have to be like a clear step slow, you know. Don't get me wrong. He didn't look all that great in that Golovkin fight, but I don't know. So I think maybe people were minorly overrating him because of the undisputed and how he was dispatching these guys like Billy Joe Saunders and whatnot in Plant. You know, Plant and Saunders won rounds. I'd say Plant won a few more, but they had some success. And then it was just a matter of time. You know, Canelo just kind of got into the, I'm trying to knock you out, trying to hit you with big shots. I'm not worrying about winning a bunch of rounds. So that's why I can kind of see him maybe losing some rounds earlier. But like I said, that stretch that he went through at 168, we all want to see David Benavidez, right? We get that. We totally get that. Or David Morrell in the future, whatever, right? But like Billy Joe Saunders at 168, go back and, well, first of all, go back and look how he got the belt, right? And, you know, Andre would have been a – was that at middleweight? Yeah, that was at middleweight, wasn't it? Yeah, I mean, he got the belt against, you know, just a vacant belt, looked like crap. I think the best fight that Billy Joe Saunders actually looked more of him himself and not out of shape and look like shit or get hurt in the fight was probably, you know, against a guy that was way past his prime. So, I don't know, man. I just don't see a path for him. I mean, like I said, his path is not the right path. You know, his path. And someone just messaged me, who was that against? That was against Martin Murray. That was the fight before. It was like a fight either like November or December the year before. So I think it was 2020. So he actually looked good in that fight. But, I mean, it's again, you know, as far as his body looked good and all that. But go back and look at, like, after the David Lemieux fight, go back and look who he fought in that time. Like, it's not, you know. So I think maybe we overrated, like, Canelo in a sense that way. You know, you can't overrate, you know, his accomplishments, not even in this division, just overall, you know. And you also can't overrate, like we were saying earlier, his resume. It just, you're not going to find a better resume. So, active fighter anyway. So, yeah, I am going to go Alvarez. I think it'll be a TKO, knockout, stoppage, whatever. I'm leaning TKO, whatever. It doesn't, you know, not to get too tied up in that. But, man, something tells me it's going to go over. Right now I'm leaning over, but I don't know. Man, that's, you know, maybe John's right. As you can see, I'm well on the fence here. But maybe John is right, because the thing about Plant and Billy Joe, especially Plant lasting longer and all that, is because, you know, he's on the move. I don't see John Ryder, like, moving that much. And then if he does get on the move, it probably ain't going to be all that pretty, and he'll probably get stopped anyway. We do have Oleksandr Vostik returning against, Bolotniks or whatever. You know, considering Vostik's been out of the ring for shit, I mean, a long-ass time. Well, hold on. He did have a – I'm sorry. He actually had a fight earlier this year. I forgot about that. Someone was saying he hadn't been in there since his last loss, but technically he did have like a 6 or 8 rounder. But, you know, it's a good fight considering he hasn't fought anybody yet that is on any kind of level or anything like that, you know. And then I was saying Gabriel Galales, but Valenzuela against Steve Spark. You know, I think, like, there's not a whole lot in this fight per se. Maybe you saw Valenzuela against who was it? It was Montana Love. Yeah, Montana Love in that fight. I mean, he lost it, but it was a competitive fight. It wasn't the same round, was it? No, I think Valenzuela went down the first, and Montana Love went down in the second. Maybe that's flip-flop. I can't remember. But I suppose I could just check. But it really, in the end, it doesn't really matter, right? But I do think, let's check in on the odds of that one, because that one's been pretty close. That's probably the closest match fight on the card. Yep, it's plus 118. Wow, you can get plus 118 right now on FanDuel. And I believe that Valenzuela is going to win that fight. I'm not super like, oh, this is going to be easy, you know. But I do like him to win the fight. Minus 125. Minus 150 is the highest I'm seeing. Another minus 133. That's at Betway. So I think that's a good fight. You know, I think that's a good competitive fight. Hopefully it should be action-packed, like I said earlier. Hopefully it turns into a brawl, a two-way brawl that lasts a long time. So we get, you know, people that rent it feel like they got their money's worth on the undercard. Otherwise, you know, Julio Cesar Martinez is fighting. I mean, there's other guys fighting, but it's not necessarily, you know, that interesting. Hopefully it'll give us something to recap and whatnot. I think there's another tight fight, not on that card, but I believe it's Benjamin and McComb. Yeah, Benjamin and McComb, that plus 152, plus 125, plus 110. That's a tight fight. That's in the UK, though. I believe that's not that well. It's definitely. Yeah, I mean, you know, it is what it is. Like I said, I'm not really looking forward to this fight per se. A lot of that just has to do with, you know, how good Canelo is as well, you know. That plays into it. When a guy's so good, you're like, I don't really think this guy has a chance to win at all, you know? So it is what it is. No biggie. You know, it's not the end of the world or anything like that. If you don't rent it, you don't rent it. You know, there has been a couple of what is the last pay-per-view for Canelo? That I didn't. Oh, like Chavez Jr. Perfect example. Chavez Jr. I didn't rent that one. I really thought it was going to be a sparring session. It's easy for me to say that now because that's what it was. But you know, I wasn't anticipating that fight whatsoever. But you know, to each his own. Like I said, this whole thing of I don't know, a lot of people talk about entertainment value because we've had a lot of pay-per-views in the last few years. To me, this one, it just doesn't do a whole lot, you know, for me. But, you know, it is what it is. I will be doing some follow-up on the Tank Garcia stuff. Got a whole bunch. It went down in my DM, a whole bunch of messages out there having to do with the rehydration clause in Barrios. Funny how Barrios never even mentioned it. He didn't use it as an excuse. The injury stuff. And then obviously Ryan Garcia, of course, these folks think that he was the pay-per-view guy. He's actually what sold the pay-per-view. And, you know, one person left a message, and then once Oscar said it, then it was like, see, Oscar even thinks it. So we'll get into some of that later. Not much later, because this isn't going to go super deep. Trying to get this thing done a little bit before tip-off, obviously with the Lakers and Golden State and whatnot. But we do have some fight news. Speaking of Ryan Garcia, as we know, he did split with Goosen. Goosen was on the Dan Raphael podcast, and this is a quote from it. Ryan and I will always be friends. Normally a fighter's not going to call you personally. He did the right thing. He called. I said, you're a real man. If he feels he needs to go in another direction, that's his choice. So some people thought, you know, that Goosen should have been at the press conference. I'm hearing like, and that's another thing, people saying, oh, you didn't talk about this, you didn't talk about that. Well, I wanted to focus on the fight. And then also, you know, I had limited time on that show. So that's another reason why, too. But I heard, you know, because we know Oscar and Bernard and Goosen wasn't there. Eric Gomez was there for Ryan Garcia as far as Golden Boy. I heard a report that Goosen got the wrong venue. And so by the time he found out he was at the wrong venue, he wouldn't have been able to make it there. That's just I don't know if that's true, though. Like I said, I haven't listened to that interview yet. Maybe he said it on there already. And then Oscar, you know, there's a report. There was a report of, well, him and Bernard, Oscar and Bernard had dinner reservations. And to me, it's like, and they just missed time when it was going to be. It's like, what do you mean dinner reservations? Are you talking about before the main event or something? Because it ended early, not just because it didn't go rounds, but remember the whole event started an hour early, so that never really rang true. That, to me, that seemed like someone was sending a message out there and seeing what the response was. That's asinine, you know. But then he, and then B-Hop, it's funny because B-Hop was like, well, his excuse, I think it was on, Fight Hype, wasn't it? Where he was like, well, the promoting's done. There's nothing else to promote. There's nothing to be there. What were we supposed to do, you know? And then he talked about how there were some, you know, some issues where he couldn't go in the ring because he touched a fighter, he touched Gervonta. And he says that he was trying to, you know, keep him from falling off the stage. However, there were two people over there that were doing a very similar thing. So I don't know. But Bernard knows better. And he even admitted if someone touched me while I was a fighter and in fighter mode at the weigh-in, I'm going to say some shit to him too. So Bernard just straight up, he didn't use the dinner excuse. He didn't use any other thing. He just said, well, what's there to promote? He didn't say I couldn't go to the press conference. He just couldn't get into the ring. And he kind of went B-Hop on us a little bit on his little monologues, which I enjoy mostly, but sometimes it's like, all right, dude, do you think like you were going to see through, like use your vision and just threaten and like intimidate Tank like from across the ring? Like, I don't know. You could say it's petty that he should have been able to be in the ring, and that's fine. I get it. That's fine. But, you know, he knows not to touch the other fighter. You know what I'm saying? It'd be different if Tank swung on his fighter and was doing something to his fighter way over the top and he grabbed him or something. That'd be different. But he didn't really say shit beyond that, right? And then in his little conspiracy stuff. But then Oscar comes out and says there was, you know, my life was being threatened. And that just didn't ring true because he went, didn't the WBC crown him with the Ring Magazine crowned him with a belt, right? Didn't they? Pretty sure they did. And he was fine there with the death threat. So I don't know. It just seemed kind of weird, dude. It just seemed kind of weird. I guess Gomez's life, it doesn't matter, you know? I don't know. It was a kind of a weird scenario, but yeah, whatever. Goosen didn't show up. I don't know the exact reason why. Someone just sent me quotes from Canelo. Oh, on Gervonta with the face of boxing. This has been a big thing that people have been talking about. I'm not retired yet, my friend. It's not that easy. I like Gervonta a lot, but he needs to do more to be the face of boxing. One fight with Garcia, I respect Ryan Garcia, isn't going to do it. That's fair. That's fair from Canelo. You know, I'll just go over it really quick, okay? So we had, I don't think we covered anything to do with Spence Crawford the last time the Ring Magazine or RingTV.com came out and said something, right? Maybe I mentioned it, but I didn't go into any detail. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail now, but they posted this new information unfolds involving the Spence Crawford mega fight. It unfolded. They're unfolding this for us. So this should be something awesome, right? Now it says, in gathering further information on the potential, blah, 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 because they said the target date was Saturday, July 22nd. Then it was July 29th, blah, 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 blah. Here's what it says at the end, okay? The fight, which is for the vacant, blah, blah, is not signed yet, but is in the process of being negotiated. Really? Well, we already know that. That's not unfolding much. What was also understood is that both Southpaws want the fight, and many associated with the fight stated that they would like the fight to take place this summer and definitely within 2023. Complications seem to be coming from one side of the table, numerous sources reveal. So there you go. There's your update. How's that? We got a coupled. Oh, all right. We did get some news of some current fights. Some of them, it's like, eh, whatever. Some of them, you know, it's like, all right, well, we knew it was going to happen, but it's official now. Some of them we knew was going to happen. We just assumed it was going to happen. A lot of that was the Lonnie Lara, Danny Garcia stuff. At some point, he would get there type thing. But, you know, Munguia, Jaime Munguia, has a pretty good fight. For him, it's a good fight. It, you could say, no doubt, that Sergey Derevchenko is, you know, clearly, like, not in his prime. You can kind of say that. It, you know, you can kind of see it now. He's fought a lot of talented guys. He's gone through a lot of 160-pounders. Credit to him. He usually comes up short, unfortunately. Anyway, it's a step-up fight, though. I will say that. You know, Jaime Munguia has needed this for quite a long, long time. It's going to be June 10th on DAZN at the Toyota Arena. Is that in Texas then? Toyota Arena. The 12-round main event is scheduled to take place at the Toyota Arena. It's presented in association with Zamper Broadcast. I must have missed where the state it says. Huh. Anyway, so yeah, I like I said, I think it is something. You know what I mean? I think it means something. Now, is it some kind of great fight? It's in California, not Texas. My bad. You know, it's a step up. So I can appreciate people will be like, oh, dude, that ain't shit. Okay, cool. But, you know, it is a step up for him. And, you know, he's needed it. So that part, I am happy that he's actually fighting somebody at least, you know, with a pulse, I guess you could say. So yeah, that's that. Then we have Amanda Serrano and Heather Hardy on the undercard of Jake Paul Nate Diaz, August 5th. Serrano, you know, pretty much handled Hardy back in like 2018, 2019, something like that. So I guess there's some name recognition there. You know, Hardy has been a popular East Coast fighter or whatever, but I don't know. It was a clear win. It seems like just an easy fight to get to the next fight, if we're being honest. And then we have we'll get to some other news as well. Matchroom, by the way, Matchroom and DAZN are delighted to announce a 3-year extension to our broadcast deals in the U.S. and Mexico. So does that mean, like, because remember, it was an 8-year deal originally. So this fall will be 5 years into it. Yeah, that's crazy to say. Came in 18, didn't it? 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. Wait a second. Did it come in? It came in late 2018. Pause. Yeah, because 2019 was like their best year, especially the second and fourth quarter. Anyway, that's official. Speaking of Matchroom, they got a nice signing, that's for sure. Regis Prograis to sign, this is from Boxing Scene, signed with Hearn's Matchroom, was also pursued by Top Rank and Bob. Prograis has chose a new promoter. Boxing Scene has learned that he signed with him. That 34-year-old Prograis will fight. It's a three-fight deal. The first fight for Prograis, new deal likely, will take place sometime this summer against an opponent. You know, they have Jack Catterall, they have Richardson Hitchens, and then they have Liam Paro, right? We'll have a little bit more news on him later, but, you know, it is what it is. Like, hey, man, if he's making good money, then it is what it is. Like, I can't, you know, I'm assuming he got offered more money you know, as a guarantee than he did with Top Rank. That's an assumption. Maybe I'm way off on that, but that's what I think. The bigger, better, high-profile fights were with ESPN. Somewhat more meaningful because of belts, I guess you could say, and opponent selection for PBCs there as well. But, you know, those two fights at least aren't bad, that's for sure. They're definitely not bad. I'm guessing it came down to money. But I don't know. Jake Donovan, again, boxing scene. Liam Paro and Jose Ramirez, WBO, formally orders 140-pound title eliminator. So he'll have another – Paro will have another shot at the same team who – this is what's kind of interesting about this – who previously bailed on the ordered title fight, right? And we're talking about Barbosa. Boxing scene has confirmed that, you know, they're going to order it. The development comes just 5 days after the sanctioning body sent an invitation to Ramirez to enter negotiations with the same amount of, you know, time. Of course, they put the time limit on that and all that. So Matchroom represents Paro, while Top Rank, of course, is Ramirez. So we'll see. It was Arnold Barbosa that, you know, it didn't come off for that one after the purse bid and whatnot. So we'll see. We'll see, you know, how this goes. Paro was entitled to a favorable end of the 60-40 split since the fight was due to take place in the U.S. Barbosa hails from the greater Los Angeles area and thus would have to earn 40% when it came to the purse bid. So, I don't know. Speaking of some more boxing news, Manny Pacquiao, this is the headline, KO'd in court. He basically, you know, breach of contract, lawsuit, $5.1 million. Kind of seemed like this was going to be the case, if we're being honest. By the way, best wishes out to David Light, who fought Okoli not long ago. He was hospitalized with suffering a stroke. Now, I heard it was mild. Definitely hoping a recovery there, man. That's rough, man. And then also Top Rank barely won the Beter Biev and Callum Smith. Speaking of Callum Smith, 2.115 did it. $15,000 they won the purse bid over Matchroom. That's crazy. So that fight's going to be taking place here like within 90 days. You know, it is what it is. I'm not, like, thinking it's a great fight, but it is what it is. Like I said, Deontay Wilder arrested in L.A., booked on gun charges. This wasn't exclusive for TMZ. Law enforcement sources tell us Wilder was pulled over in Hollywood at around 1:15 a.m. after LAPD officers claimed his Rolls-Royce windows were illegally tinted and his license plate was obstructed. During the stop, cops say they smelled an odor of burnt marijuana coming from his ride, so they searched the car. Our sources say they then found weed in a 9mm in the vehicle, put Wilder in custody, blah, blah, blah. So isn't weed legal in California? Or is it still like you have to have a medical, you just got to get the medical card? Are they beyond that, or is that what they do? You got to get you go in and say, I got a headache. I need a medical. I got to get a doctor to sign something. Is that what it is still? I'm lost on that. My state just approved it, but it's still got to go through a little yellow tape, but it is going to happen. Weed is going to be legal. I don't know the process yet because the bill isn't official, but yeah, because otherwise smelling weed, if it's legal, what would that have to do with anything? Maybe it's, you know, I get the gun thing if he doesn't have a permit for the gun. He was wrong, you know, he wasn't driving in New York. That's good because they're real heavy on it. But, you know, I don't know, man. I know he put out something like, I'd rather be caught with it than without it. That's an old hip-hop line. So hopefully that doesn't do anything, you know. Hopefully that doesn't do anything to this fight that potentially is going to happen with him and AJ. Obviously, I doubt, even charged with stuff, I doubt that they get it in time by that time. Hopefully not, though. Anyway, there was Frank Martin said that he, someone, I think it was on Fight Hub, or no, I think it was Fight Hype again, and they, someone asked him, you know, when are you going to be back? When can we see you back, Frank, to Frank Martin? He said, we're looking for like June, July. So I'm looking around June, July, and he kind of smiled because they were thinking, are you going to be the co-feature to Spence Crawford? So yeah, that was it. That's all I got. What else we got here? Did you agree? Like I said, I'm getting to this stuff, okay? I am getting to this stuff. I know that the people, it's funny, these people don't call in, though. They'll message you all day long, but they won't call in and give their point and have a nice debate, you know? They just won't. They won't. They want me to talk about shit, but they won't call in and like I said, have a nice debate. Someone sent me, oh, yeah, this is the dude, Simon Jordan, from, what is it, Talk Sport. He revealed a rumored, the purses, basically. Eddie Hearn has a little laughing emoji under there. It says Tyson Fury, 90 mil, Usyk 50, and then 30 apiece for Wilder and Joshua. Yeah, I don't look too deep in that. Now, I'm not going to say they're all going to get paid $100 million either. I don't know. Oh, by the way, we do have an interesting, hang on, let me make sure. Oh, Sulecki. So I saw in a couple different places, Sulecki is going to fight on a Showbox coming up June 9th. And I bring that up because that probably means that there is no fight with Charlo unless he's getting a tune-up and it's going to be in August or something. But that's a good sign. That's a good sign. This is Jake Donovan again. Unboxing scene from yesterday. Raees Aleem and Sam Goodman, IBF title eliminator, eyed for June 8th in Australia. Hard target search across all four sanctioning bodies appears to have finally led to a willing opponent for Aleem. So, yeah, Goodman and Aleem, the battle of unbeaten contenders is targeted to take place June 8th at a location to be determined, in Australia, pending signing contracts and all that good. So no later than May 18th, they have to get all this stuff signed and sealed and delivered. Marshall Kaufman, King Promotions, is the promoter for Aleem, but Tom Brown, TGB, handled the sanctioning body logistics on behalf of the PBC. Goodman is promoted by Matt and George Rose, No Limit Boxing, which also has Tim Zhu. So good for him. You know, it goes on further to say, interesting, Aleem is still tied to the WBC title eliminator versus Mexico's David Picasso. So we'll see. The fight went to purse bid and was won from, Sanford. So, we'll see. We'll find out here pretty damn soon. That's what I do know. I don't know a whole lot, but that's what I do know. Okay. Someone sent me, Hitchinson turned down the IBF final eliminator, Durgashev. I don't know. Is that a fact? Is that true? Eddie Reynoso, this is Fino Boxing. Eddie Reynoso has declared that he is open to training Ryan Garcia again against the rumors of that Garcia's team has reached out to him about potentially reuniting following his Gervonta Davis defeat. It's kind of interesting there. Oh, by the way, Jonathan Lopez, I saw the highlight. Jonathan Lopez, I think it was the third round, knocked out Nunez. Just a little bit of news there. Nothing too crazy. Now, Richardson says, I never turn down shit. Watch your mouth. So, I think that must be a sanctioning body thing that they went through all the top 15 and maybe he didn't even know that it was offered to him. Really know that. I'm just saying. Maybe that's the case. I'm not trying to give it out just randomly. I'm just wondering, you know, just, I don't know. No clue. Jermaine Ortiz is actually inked now with Top Rank, a multi-fight co-promotional contract with Top Rank in conjunction with CES Boxing. He's set to return on the undercard of a big fight coming up, Taylor Lopez. So that's cool. Ortiz is a damn good fighter. By the way, Jonathan Lopez and Nunez, the Lopez-Nunez fight from Guadalajara, that was on Pro Box TV last night, just to clarify that. Got a little bit more than we'll get out of here. I might as well talk about it. Lara, we knew this shit was going to happen. The WBA, through its championship committee, granted special permit to middleweight champion Arislandi Lara to fight Danny Garcia August 5th, assuming that's going to be at the Barclays, right? Team Zarafa, mandatory challenger, was consulted, and after negotiations, it was possible to reach an agreement between both parties. So they gave him an exception. So that's nice. Boog Williams says the WBO should grant a special permit for Usyk versus Wilder due to Du Bois' injury and difficult negotiating the fight. Yeah, right. timing. This is a Breadman. Timing is important. Boxing. Remember, I'm saying it. Danny Garcia is live versus Lara. Yeah. That could be true. That could be true. I wouldn't say that that's a lie, you know. But this is a fight that we kind of knew was coming. The writing's been on the wall ever since Golovkin. Deuce said, you mean we won't get Lara and Zarafa next? Yeah, like that's a bad, you know. People are dogging this fight, which I understand. But, you know, compared to what, when and how, what's been happening at this division, you know? The fight sells. That's what it does. It's not going to put up a $3 or $4 million gate at the Barclays. That's not what I'm saying by sell, but you know, it is what it is. I don't really look too deep into this one. That's about it. Oh, Shakur Stevenson, Boxing Gems. By the way, Boxing Gems on YouTube, it's a fucking gem. The shit is bomb. It's an old word, I know, but it's bomb. And he's detailing his shit, gets right to business, usually does predictions too, but that dude is sharp. Definitely follow him, Boxing Gems. Anyway, Shakur Stevens said, I got hurt with a body shot. The crowd in Valdez don't know that I'm really hurt. I went back to the corner, sat down, looked at my grandfather and said, yo, I feel like I got to throw up. And you can see it was a right hand to the body, played it off really well. The crowd's going nuts thinking it was some other shots anytime he lands a shot, you know? That's funny, dude. The same people who are mad at Prograde for signing with Matchroom when most of the smoke at 140 is Top Rank were perfectly cool with Crawford re-signing with Top Rank when most of the smoke was at PBC. I mean, you're not lying. Oh, this is Fred. Wait, Eddie said it was an 8-year deal in 2018 Zone. Now they've announced the 3-year extension to 2026. Kind of confused that way. We talked about this. Now it seems like it is official. George Kambosos versus Maxie Hughes. This is going to be on, is this regular ESPN or ESPN Plus? I think it's regular ESPN due to the Top Rank Kambosos Ludabella thing. This is actually from Dan Raphael. So they're targeting May or June in Kambosos' home country of Australia, but they said, so they must have targeted it. But it will take place in July, United States. Sounds like July 22nd or July 29th at the Palms. Either way, the headline is top-ranked boxing on ESPN. So that's a pretty good fight. I don't mind that fight. I don't mind that fight at all. It's kind of weird that they're here. So this is towards this is King P towards Procre. All the big fights at 140 at PBC are top rank, yet you opt to sign with the promotion where you'll fight Montana Love and Richardson Hitchens for peanuts. I hereby declare the Winky Wright School of Business be changed to the Regis Procre School of Business. You know, I hear what you're saying, but the peanuts part I'm not sure about. When it comes to the comp, you know, like the minimum, I don't know about that. This is my opinion, and maybe other news will come out and it'll prove it wrong. That's cool. But I think that the zone actually per fight guaranteed, right? The guarantee. I actually think the opposite. That's what I think. And by the way, the zone, you know, with the how they handled the pay-per-view stuff, I saw one the other day, a couple of them that said, sorry about the inconvenience, but hey, if you put this code in, you get Canelo Ryder for free. And Nadim said, sorry you didn't get your steak and lobster that you ordered. We're giving you a code to give you rice and beans on the house, the zone management. Like, the way they handled this shit was really, really bad. I mean, really bad. It was horrible. I mean, there's just no way around it. It was fucking horrible. It just was, dude. It just was. I mean, to not get back. By the way, Eric Priest just signed 24-year-old prospect to Golden Boy. And then, oh, yeah, Teofimo, by the way. Teofimo, well, before we get to that, DAZN, though, and the pay-per-view stuff, the way they weren't, it took them a long time to get back to some people. And one dude got allegedly charged 9 fucking times. And I also heard a little bit more information about that $60 stuff, right? You know how they charge $60 for the Davis Garcia. They had to make up the difference to Showtime. So maybe that's why they were a little slow in getting the money back, because some people were saying, hey, you know, like they were posting messages, like a local promoter here posted a message saying, hey, this is what they told me, that I have to go to, you know, the Apple store wherever I purchased it. It's like, dude, I bought it through DAZN, through you. You're telling me to go someplace else. Sorry, I can't do anything. The customer service, as far as an announcement very soon, needed to come way earlier, and has it ever really come all the way? I don't think so. I haven't heard one all the way. But just so you know, those requesting refunds from DAZN can also make a FTC can make the FTC aware of the issue by filing a complaint. reportfraud.ftc.gov. If you're, you know, because that shit's wild. Like, I'm not saying it's nearly as many as, you know, some people are going crazy about this and that, and I don't know. But I'm just saying that they handled that like shit, dude. And some of the responses that they were talking about is like, oh, wow, dude, really? That's what you're really saying that shit right now? Like, what the fuck? So did I already say this? I think I said this last week, didn't I? June 17th, Liam Smith, Christopher Eubank Jr., rematch. It's going to be at middleweight this time in Manchester. Pretty sure I announced that last week. But yeah, I mean, some dude literally had $900 in charges. I mean, that's fucking wild, dude. That's super, super, super wild. So yeah, they fucked that up. I can't even lie on that one. They fucked that up. All right. Oh, yeah. So Bradley, you know, or sorry, I'm reading Timothy Bradley, Andre Ward. So Teofimo Lopez, his dad tried to come out and, like, speak for his son saying, hey, we didn't mean it like that, but he just dug a hole deeper. He basically is, like, complaining that the black fighters now, Shakur Stevenson, Devin Haney, and others, this is Teofimo Lopez speaking of Top Rank in ESPN, that they're getting all the promo now, right? Even though he dropped the fucking ball when he got the promo, you know, but to sit there and say that they, I mean, that's just bullshit. It's not true. Like, Teofimo, you know, was on the card or main eventing the Heisman, when they always have the Heisman show, it's like, was it the second, I think it's the second week in December. And the Heisman is the lead-in for the card, and he usually does really good numbers, and he's done some really good numbers on that. So to act like they're promoting him more than Haney, shit, Haney had to, he hasn't gotten ratings like he did. They haven't put him in from some, you know, in front of some kind of major event, you know, as a lead-in. And shit, he had to go to Australia twice. So, of course, they're going to be, like, what, black fighters can't get any fucking pub over there? Is that what you're saying? Like, it's just so weird the way he said it. Like, I mean, his quote was, if you want the black fighters, you could keep them. That just sounds ignorant as fuck. Whether you think that's racist or not, why the fuck would you say it? Why don't you just say their names? Why don't you just straight up say their names? As if everybody, the only people getting promo at Top Rank at ESPN are black fighters. That's nonsense, you know? So, I don't know. He just said some stupid shit. And his dad tried to come out and say, oh, you know, he feels a certain way. Why don't he explain the fucking way he feels, you know, instead of having, you know, this dumb shit, you know? Okay, we'll get into just a little bit of this stuff at the end here, the tank and stuff. So the Barrios rehydration. So Barrios says that he had a rehydration clause, okay? But he clearly, you know, to bring this up is funny because he kept his mouth quiet. He wasn't going to use it as an excuse. So I actually respect Barrios for that. Nobody knew that there was a rehydration clause. I got to admit, I was kind of surprised that it didn't happen because at that point, Tank was coming up to 140. He's not a big 135-pounder per se size-wise. He's thick. Pause, but you know what I'm saying. So there's that. There's new information from Barrios, but it kind of works against Ryan Garcia because he didn't make an excuse. Now, the injury in camp, I've already kind of went over that. You know, you come into the fight how you come in, dude. It is what it is. You can't make excuses. If you were gonna get hit to the body and that was gonna stop the fight because if he was gonna hit this certain rib that you hurt and that's all it took to stop the fight, then you should have fucking postponed it. I mean, I don't know when this, you know, the mole and all that shit. I don't know when something happened in camp, what week or whatever. But they knew about, they probably, likely knew if this injury actually did happen, if, and it affected them, they knew what that gate was going to look like from the first day of sales. And you could tell just how they priced it. They knew that shit was going to be up there. And it turned out to be the fifth largest gate of all time. So you could have postponed that, motherfucker, is my point. The catchweight rehydration effect on Ryan, so you're telling me in those first couple rounds when his hands seemed fast as ever, I mean, on the scale, he didn't look dried out, looked fine. The morning after, didn't really get a great look at him, but he didn't come in there looking like he was about to kill himself. You know, some guys, and I know he's had mental health issues, I'm not trying to poke fun at that, but, you know, some guys look like, I've been there, shit. My senior year, I stopped going to lunch for wrestling, trying to make weight. I just wouldn't even go because I was just depressed and it made me feel worse being in front of all my friends watching them eat these goddamn chicken sandwiches, you know? So, but yeah, I didn't see a major thing and he kept saying and saying how he's good, he's good, he's good. And his body looked fine. his body looked fine. And not only that, but people seem to forget Ryan Garcia was willing last summer to fight Fortuna, okay, at 135. I said this before, too. Fortuna is the one who they accommodated him with the weight, okay? This is from Garcia himself. This was agreed to long before the contract was signed, Garcia told The Zone. Everybody was trying to make it seem like it was just put in right now that we're doing at 139. This was already discussed way before we signed the contract. It really has nothing to do with if I can make 135. I know I can make 135. I'm on track to make 135 right now. I'm 6 pounds away, 7 pounds away. So it's really nothing, but this is smart. It's not a title fight. We're just coming back because he was off for a while. And we're going to make 139. What's the difference between 4 pounds? He laughs. And, you know, he also talked about, you know, his weight, you know, his walk-around weight and how he doesn't want to put on 10 pounds and how he's going to be fine and how he actually thought he hustled them for an extra pound. He was trying to get it at 138, he said. He thought they had an agreement. It went to 136, whatever you want to say. But come on, dude. This is an interesting tweet by Joe Martel. Ioka Franco, too, on June 24th, puts the sport back up to 25 top 10 clashes through June 2023. 13 top 5 and 12 top 10 matches. But boxing is just dead, bro. It's just done. Okay, now, let's go on to, and someone actually, okay, so this, they actually sent me a Montero post on Twitter. Ryan Garcia's new face of pay-per-view, according to completely unverified sources. He pulled in over 1 million buys for the first pay-per-view card. Tank Davis has fought on pay-per-view multiple times and only was able to generate around 200,000 buys. King Rise is a star, right? So they used that. They used Oscar as well. It's funny. So the other stuff is verified, but then this isn't verified, even though it comes from like a really good source. And by the way, Montero's the guy that said this would be a boxing after dark. It's on pay-per-view, no belt, catchweight, unproven fighters. This would be a boxing after dark, a almost $23 million live gate, 1.2 million buys, but this would be an after dark? Okay, HBO after dark. Actually, Ortega said, this is a Cody retweet. Did any boxing after dark fights ever do anything in the ballpark of $20 million at the gate? It's amazing how Montero consistently makes itself look like a moron in epic proportions. Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. But people really got going because the guy himself, Oscar, where'd it go? Okay, Oscar basically said he's the guy that takes the guy down because look at it. You know, the other million he's responsible for, right? That's basically what he was saying. He's like, well, if he's been only doing 200 to 250 somewhere in there, 1,000 buys, right? 200,000 to 250. I think 250 is like the top one he's done or whatever, allegedly reported. You know, that was a big thing. Like, well, there's the million. So he's responsible for the million. And obviously that's not how it works. You know what I mean? Because then, okay, here's what he says. Ryan Garcia is the new face. Gervonta only did 200, you know, a few times out. Ryan's the one who generated the million. So here's the deal. If that was the case, right, if that was the case, okay, if that was the case, then he'd also be doing big live gates, right? If you're worth a million buys, Ryan Garcia, first of all, we would have already heard them doing pay-per-view, successful pay-per-views on DAZN, one. Two, we would have at least heard he's good for a million sign-ups back when it was only, what, 20? It's still only, what, 25 bucks or something? Not only, but you know what I'm saying. So we never got this report. They've never been over a million subscribers ever. If he was such a star, a million people would sign up for, you know, a third of the pay-per-view price then, right? But just the live gate alone, Tank has been doing $3 and $4 and $5 million at the gate. Atlanta, Baltimore, Barclays in Brooklyn, L.A., you know, at the, I'm going to call it Staples Center. Before this fight, Ryan Garcia did two or three, maybe three tops, million-dollar gates. So if he was responsible for a million buys, that would put him up right there with, like, just as big as Canelo, right? And Canelo, you know, at least does, you know, like for the Kovalev and the Jacobs, he was doing like $8 million. The BJ, I think Billy Joe Saunders was a $9 million gate. You'd be doing like $8 to $10 million every time out if you were good for $1 million. If you're solely responsible for $1 million, why weren't you doing $5, $6, $8? You know, $1 million gates, because you weren't the A side. That's why. So to, you know, remember, $1.25 million was Trinidad and Oscar, and then he fought Floyd. It was over. It was $2.5 million, right? So you're telling me Floyd was doing $1 million every time out, and he was the star? Is that what you're saying? Come on, dude. You know, no, he wasn't. He was doing like between 300 and 400 thousand on his. You know, against Zab and against Gotti and Baldomir. Even, you know, shit, if we talk about under 300,000 or anywhere from 2 to 300,000, we went over that when we did the pay-per-view list. Oscar's got two fights under 300,000 before he fought Trinidad. Shit, him and Mosley didn't do $1 million the first time out. Technically, I don't think they did $1 million in the rematch, but I think that did like 580 or something like that the first time. Anyway, the proof is in the pudding, okay? They would have already announced we have more than, you know, 550,000 people signed up to watch, which pushes us to 1 million subscribers to watch Ryan Garcia for $20. Of course that would have been the case. I'm saying nobody younger signed up to watch Ryan Garcia. That's not what I'm saying. But if he's responsible for the million pay-per-view buys, it would have done at least a million signups for something, you know, like I said, on DAZN's a third of the price. So, come on, guys. But, hey, that's okay. That's okay. If you want to go that way, that's fine. Oh, wow. This is a guy. Someone just sent me nosmokesports.com. Tony Bellew, Anthony Joshua, he changed the game like Muhammad Ali changed the game. Okay. Will Gervonta Davis and Ryan Garcia be a bigger pay-per-view than Canelo and Ryder? Is that real? Yeah, it will be. it'll be way bigger. No, it's not going to be. This is King P again. So if Ryan gets the credit for Tank's 1.2 million buys, does that mean GGG gets the credit for doing over $1 million twice with Canelo? He did about 900,000 with Cotto. Similar numbers with Chavez Jr. But yeah, that's just not how it works, guys. I understand that you want to hold on to your guy and stuff, but it's just not how it works, man. Sorry, you know. That about wraps it up. I don't think there's is there any other kind of last little bit here? I think that's it. I think that'll wrap it up. Oh, here we go. One more for the Gifford. Oh, here's another one. This is a boxing scene post. I can see it. It's not a tweet. Unless it's a combination. I'll die laughing if Canelo Ryder comes close or surpasses Tank Garcia in terms of pay-per-view. It's a good possibility, though, with cheap pay-per-view and a solid Hispanic fan base. It ain't going to do $1 million. If that was the case, Bivol would have done $1 million. Who gives a shit? Just watch the fight. Have fun with it. You know what I mean? That's what I say. Anyway, I'm going to get out of here. Let's hope some of these undercard fights pop off. Let's just hope for a good week. Hopefully Ryder can actually take it to the inside with Canelo and rough him up and that, you know, make it a competitive fight. I'm always looking for competitive fights, even if I got money on the line. Anyway, I'm out. See you next week. It won't be next Thursday, okay? I'll get to you earlier. Peace.
Once you become the world champion, I believe that you feel you have the upper hand. So now, when, as you fight, let's say you fight 4 or 5 years of straight survival, the bullshit, the holdback, and when you become the world champion, you're like, you know what, I made it. I'm going to show you it's this. So I'm going to get every dollar worth of what I deserve. Why? Because I'm the world champion.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.